Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And I'm like a little bit gobsmacked, Richard. So I had so much fun looking at this new exhibition. And then I wrote to the press agent, can I have these two genius artists on the air? And I just have to say, I looked at so many things that they've both done collectively, individually speaking, and I'm just so thrilled that they're here. And what I'm talking about, first of all, let me introduce what the exhibition is. This is at the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum, and I'm not sure, is it Aquin?
Aquin.
Aquin, okay. So it's Aquin. It's at the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum, and this is such a branch out for the museum because it's kind of controversial, kind of abstract. It's everything you would expect of a really world-class, well, I mean, that the fact that our Santa Barbara Maritime Museum is world-class, this exhibit is fantastic. And so what it's doing is Aquin is photographs and paintings and prints and so much more by David Ellis and Larry Vignon. And Larry, am I saying your last name right?
No, Vignon.
Vignon, okay.
V-I-G-O-N, yeah.
Vignon, okay. So, and then I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what these guys have done in their past, but the museum itself is, this is going on view April 9th, and it's going to run through the summer. July 26th is the final day. And you just have to take a look at it. If you take a look at the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum's website, you'll see this is an exhibition that explores all kinds of things. It explores the nature of time, the nature of mythology, the nature of imagery and found imagery, transformation. And I found it so interesting, Richard, you're just going to die laughing when you hear this. So there's a strong connection. You know, Rich and I are both Jungians.
Oh, really?
Dyed in the wool Jungians. And I mean, I wish you could see my desk. So my computer is propped up with a couple of, well, actually, it's the red book. It's the one that you helped with. And so I've got the red book underneath my computer now. It's a go-to. Anyway, this whole exhibition was so evocative of a dreamlike state, of a liminal state. But at the same time, it's so funny. There's so many funny things about it. There's a face of a fish that just sent me into a gale of laughter. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, it's an amazing exhibit. And we'll talk about the gentleman involved. And also, I have the pleasure of actually meeting, I've actually wanted to meet him, Dean Noble, our new executive director. And he I know him from Ealing's Park. But he comes to us from all sorts of experiences, not the least of which is the Santa Barbara Zoo, where he was there for 13 years. And Dean is, we're going to talk a little bit about Dean's background. But I mean, what's so interesting to me is that this exhibit is so involved, so multimedia, so many messages that it carries. And then I was looking at Dean's background and he's got some early experiences with content management and messaging. And I thought, I get it. I get why this exhibit is kind of his baby and why it's so important. So let me give you a little bit background before I introduce these genius artists with us today. Aquin invites viewers to consider the sea as a subject and a metaphor. I mean, it's been a subject and a metaphor since, I guess, Homerian sagas and before. But anyway, it's the delicate balance between permanence and loss. And how that matters is that we've had David Ellis, and David is with us today, but we've had David looking at loss in a really interesting elegy work, as an epic elegy work, and it's called lobospheres. And we're going to talk about that. But that was sort of my entryway into what Akuyan was going to be directed towards for me. And then we've got Flotsam and Jetsam, and that is Larry's part of the exhibit and how that manifests. I was talking to you about the fish and how that manifests, and it turns all this negativity of what's floating in our oceans into an eye-opening exposition. And I mean, it's magnificent. So let me just introduce the artist first. Larry is an award-winning art director, designer, fine artist. How we were laughing, John and I, my partner and I were laughing at all of the album covers that either we had, or Larry had designed in his background. He left the Art Center College of Design in 1972, and he went on to create some of the most iconic album covers in pop and rock history. I always wondered about the Fleetwood Mac cover, the one album cover that was so enigmatic to me with the two, like, I don't know what you call them, like yo-yos. That just never, I was like, what is that? Yeah, Larry, I loved it.
They're not yo-yos, they're balls.
But yeah, I mean, you don't want to say it. Okay, Fleetwood Mac, Eric Clapton, Counting Crows, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Chicago, Pat Benatar, Carole King, Sparks, Boney James, Thomas Dolby, Bonnie Raitt, and many others. He's in, as of 2020, the Album Cover Hall of Fame. And he has worked with some of the most celebrated photographers. And that's where the other genius artist comes in as well. And so we're going to talk about David Ellis, too. But he's worked with Helmut Newton, George Harrell, my absolute magnificent favorite, George Harrell, Joyce Tennyson, William Claxton, Peter Beard, and Norman Seeff. And this is a consummate image maker. And then he went from album covers, he went into the corporate world, did corporate design for some of the biggest names in the world. And it just got me just laughing about this man that was so close to the music industry, designing for Hard Rock Hotel in Las Vegas and the House of Blues, and then going into Broadway posters. And then, yay, Richard, this is the book I'm sitting in front of, Faden's publication, by the way, of the Red Book by C.G. Jung, considered an iconic book, amazing book. We had well, this is a conversation, Larry, for another time. But, you know, we have a Jungian circle, and a bunch of us got together. A lot of the professors from UCSB that study Jung, and we actually got together. We all brought our red books to the meeting, and we all gave our own separate mini lecture about what the book means to us. And so I have to say, all of the professors gathered together. And either had to be a professor or have a doctorate in depth psychology to be part of the circle. And so this circle was, we got so involved with your book that none of us left with the same red book we came in with. So I have an old tattered red book because I grabbed Professor so-and-so's red book on the way out, and he grabbed mine. So he got this pristine copy, and I got his old ripped up copy. What was so interesting is I got all his notes as well. So I never called him and said, oh, Professor so-and-so, I've got your red book. But that was something I learned about you. Many books to his credit. I Have to Get Dream, this book called Dream, published in Norton, A Serious Play. I got to get that one, too. That's available at Chaucer's. And I never put the face to the name. He designed our 2025 Solstice poster. And I love the poster, by the way, Larry. And so that's just a little bit about Larry. And we can go. I've got more information if, as the hour goes on about Larry. Let me introduce David. David Ellis. I don't think I looked at his website. I don't think there's a picture he couldn't take, because everything he's done, street photography, he's done nature photography, he's done abstract photography, he's done You know how you put oil on water and you get that kind of glow, iridescent photography. It looked radioactive to me. He's done documentary work, documentary journalistic work, portrait work, some evocative portraits, international travel work. What else? My gosh. I mean, the list goes on. Conservation work. You know, and so now you're going to say to me, Richard, okay, Elizabeth, so how does Lobospheres come into this? Well, Lobospheres, you got to take a look at David Ellis's website to see what Lobospheres actually is about. He received a Gold Award for Excellence in the 24th Japan International Art Exchange at the Metropolitan Art Museum in Tokyo just last year for Lobospheres. It is an amazing foray. So what's the story behind Lobospheres? Let me put it short because we'll talk about it a little later on. He started to wander some of our most iconic beaches, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But he started to wander, and as he wandered, he thought, okay, you know, usually your camera is pointing at the vistas. And he said, you know, I all of a sudden realized that I was looking at things underneath my feet that were so worthy of photographing that I never turned my camera right side up. I consistently, for years, going to Weston Beach for 20 years, captured these images in, you know, below his feet, whether it be like a little, like a tide pool or something. But he was capturing these wonderful images. And I was laughing about those too, because I was thinking, I can definitely see like my really tyrannical great uncle George. There he is. And I can see all these images. And then I saw some heartbreaking images of people crying and people, you know, bemoaning the fact that they were all twisted up on the shore that was beautiful at one point and shouldn't be, you know, should be pristine. I loved it, in short. And so Lobospheres, you know, that's something we're going to talk about. The full title is Lobospheres, The Lost Soul of Point Lobos. And what we're going to look at is the coming together of these two, I'm calling them genius artists. And boy, you got to, dear listener, you got to take a look at both websites. And before we launch into the Aquian, actually, Dean Noble, we're so thrilled that you've assumed the helm. And, you know, I was absolutely thrilled to read about your background. I think it's absolutely wonderful and perfect for what the museum's calling for. And, you know, obviously Ealing's Park Foundation executive director for 7 years, Santa Barbara Zoo for 13 years. He's no stranger to radio. Richard, you've heard him or his shows on KCLU, where he did the zoological radio. I loved it. I used to record that and send that to my son because he was a great fan of our little, not so little, but our zoological museum here. But yeah, Zoo Radio Live ended up being sort of an idea that caught hold. And Richard went on to UCSB and the Aquarium of the Pacific in Long Beach, et cetera, et cetera. I think Long Beach still does their series, don't they, Dean? I think they do.
I'm not sure, but thank you so much for the compliment. Everything I learned about radio, I know from Richard Dugan, who's engineering us right now. But it was a real treat, Elizabeth. Some of my favorite episodes were how to give mouth-to-mouth resuscitation and CPR to a porcupine. How to do a vasectomy on an adult bull elephant out on the African savannah, or how to do a full body massage on a Komodo dragon. So just tying back to Larry and David and what the joy of this museum is, it's just the storytelling. And Santa Barbara in general, and Santa Barbara Channel in particular, whether you want to call it a global biodiversity hotspot, or the Galapagos of the Northern Pacific, or the graveyard of the Pacific due to all of the shipwrecks out here. So many stories to be told here. We had a tour group of sixth graders in from Oceano, and one of the boys raised his hand and said, "Do you have anything from the Titanic?" And I said, "We don't need anything from the Titanic. We have so many phenomenal stories." So thank you, Elizabeth, and thank you.
I can't say, you know, and so I have to just ask you one. I have to ask you two questions, looking at your bio, and then I want to talk about the show, Aquian. First of all, how do you develop and promote a strategic partnership for Albert Einstein, Steve McQueen, the Wright brothers, and Mae West?
I think both Larry and David, in particular, Larry will appreciate this. I was the marketing director for a gentleman who did celebrity rights licensing. We had Albert Einstein, Steve McQueen, Mae West, Johnny Weissmuller, and each of these people, you know, is, for lack of a better word, upon their departure, has become a brand. You know, they each say something, their image alone. So I worked for a gentleman. We were down in Beverly Hills across the street from CAA. My boss, Roger, said, "Across the street is CAA. They get 10%. When they die, they come over here. We get 20, and they're not a pain in the ass anymore."
I mean, it's just like, okay, I guess even these big, these huge, great big names that, you know, are just, everybody knows them, I guess they still are managed. That was, you were director of marketing at the Roger Richman Agency.
Yeah, and I don't know if you could call that Jungian, you know, do these people represent something on a subconscious level to us? I forget, I think there's a term.
Exactly. No, and then my second question, you have a certificate, a very prestigious certificate, from the Grazing, G-R-A-Z-I-N-I-N-G, the Grazing School of the West. Now, I think when I looked at that, I mean, being kind of like a visual person, I've been an appraiser of art for 30 years. I looked at that and I saw Larry, you know, the beautiful headshot that's on the website for the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum. I looked at you and I thought, okay, maybe he's got a doppelganger as a cow. What is a grazing certificate?
Oh, it was the Grazing Academy of the West. It's through the White Buffalo Land Trust. They have a beautiful ranch up on the way to Halama Beach, and they do a workshop. You know, as a representative of Ealing's Park, we brought in sheep not only to get rid of hazardous fire fuels, but to restore the soil. They aerate the soil. They leave behind what we call black gold. And so just as part of my expansion of my roles and my knowledge as the executive director of these 230 acres, I thought it would be best that I learn more about grazing and really the most wonderful down-to-earth people. It was a wonderful weekend.
Well, we got that one. It just was quite a interesting bio and so many interesting things that you've done. And what ties, I think, everybody together that's involved with this show with Aquian is this capacity for narrative and capacity for visual narrative. And that's a really incredible art form, you know, the visual narrative. And you know, like you said, well, you don't know how much that public relations would, the collective unconscious would have to do with Jung. It has everything to do with the ability to create a visual narrative, which I mean, here we have two magnificent experts. Let me just say the idea of Aquian, the two genius artists that we have on the show today decided that it would be interesting to do highlights from Lobospheres. We talked about that, the Lost Souls of Point Lobos, which is a 20-year photographic exploration of wave carved forms. And then Larry's Flotsam & Jetsam, which is an immersive collection of paintings, large-scale prints, found objects, lino cuts. Not everybody does lino cuts today. Video and dimensional collages. And that, what was the aim of the show? The aim was to show us the power and fragility of an ever-changing shoreline. And then I could go on about this because, you know, you've got to look at a couple of the website's here to understand what's going on. But I mean, this is world-class stuff. It really is. I guess I want to start by talking to David. Ask David, David, did you know of Larry before you decided to put this show together?
Oh, sure. Elizabeth, thank you for the kind words.
I could go on.
Larry and I have known each other a very long time. In fact, we were business partners for about 12 years in L.A. Larry was a remarkable designer. It remains a remarkable designer, but commercially was completely different, even among all the superstar designers in L.A. Larry just had a knack for coming up with imagery that was exactly perfect and completely unexpected. You know, it wasn't the kind of thing where, you know, I was in marketing. I worked in PR firms. I'm a brand strategist. I've launched 100 companies. I even went to work, God save me, for a Fortune 500 company at the end of my career. But anyway, Larry and I were both simultaneously, I had worked with Larry on a huge project. Very successfully, I was his client for the launch of DirecTV, and we did an incredible job. Got to know each other, and at one point, we both were kind of at odds and ends with our careers. I wanted to get out of public relations and do something more creative, and Larry was looking to expand beyond the music career. And you know, I said, you know, why don't we take a test drive and see if we can do something together? You know, and see if this makes some sense. And so we didn't change anything right away. We did four or five test projects and then found a big one with Paramount, and that put us in business. And the minute we opened the doors, just things just started flying. I mean, it just could not have gone better. So we had a professional relationship first for a number of years.
What did you do with Paramount?
We launched the United Paramount Network, UPN, which became CW, which God only knows what it is now. You know, it's probably moved on. But we had really high-class clients. We had Epson, Valley Crest, a number of corporate things. We launched Fandango, you know, on and on and on. It was just a remarkable partnership. And so, you know, we learned a lot from each other. I learned a ton from Larry about simplicity, about the power of a single image, about concept. It was inspiring every day. To work with him. We parted company, not for any other reason except that, you know, life makes changes. 12 years is a long term for a creative partnership. And we're now back with this, and I'm just thrilled to be working with him again and to be working on this exhibition.
You talked about what you learned. So you learned from Larry the power of simplicity, the power of a single image, and so I'm going to ask you something maybe a little uncomfortable, but now, you know, as you're thinking about hanging the show, is there a picture that you'd like? Is there something that Larry's done that you would like to steal or have stolen already?
Stolen, I don't know that that's the word. I would assume mentoring in lots of ways. I have, in addition to the abstracts, I have a lot of figurative pieces. I probably would not have come to had I not been exposed to Larry's work. So I wouldn't say steal. I think Larry's inimitable. I mean, I don't think you can steal Larry.
I mean it literally. So if you're gonna take a two-dimensional work off the wall at the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum and sneak it in your car and bring it home, which one would you steal?
Oh my, probably his latest. Larry, I can't remember which name you, the blue one, which one did you end up, where did you end up naming it?
The Selkie?
Selkie, yeah. That'd be under my arm and down the parking lot, that's for sure.
What is it now? Tell me, because we're on radio, so tell me what it is.
It's a portrait, and it's a portrait, abstracted, impressionistic. It's layers and layers of colors of blue, with the most remarkable expression, clear eyes. Maybe it's a mermaid, yeah. Maybe it's
I can tell you the Selkie is from mythology, I think from Irish and, well, several Scottish, but it's a creature that can change from a seal into a human. So it's a shapeshifter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's Celtic mythology, isn't it? The Silky.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, okay. So I don't know if you can see behind me. Can you see that little brown dot behind me?
I see a dog. Yes.
Yes.
That's Selkie.
That's
his name.
Really?
Yeah.
How amazing.
But anyway, do go on. So this is a little sort of seal mermaid, and they're mythical Celtic beings. And so that's the piece that Larry has done that is going to be stolen very soon. Right.
We'll have to beef up security, I think.
Right? Yeah. It's got to be on the wall for 4 months, so there's no fear of it disappearing anytime soon. Plenty of
people. So, David, why does it call you? What is about it that calls you?
The expression and the unexpectedness of it, the fact that this is just not some kind of mythical rendering. It's got resonance. It's like all of Larry's work has a certain metabolism to it, I guess is the best way to put it. You know, it's living stuff. It's not just graphic things. There's no tricks. It's just very human. It's very animated and alive, which is very different than I think a lot of people. It's just one of these things. He's just got a way of doing this. And what this image spoke to me just because of the expression, because it comes out of this sort of sense of, it's almost chaotic in a weird way because it's so impressionistic on the one hand. On the other hand, it's very realistic and it just connects to you. It connected to me.
I'm actually reading something that I don't know if any of you've read, but it's Joyce Carey. And Joyce is a male author from the 30s, 1930s, British. And he wrote a book called The Horse's Mouth. And it's about a mural artist in the 1930s, 1940s, and before the Second World War in Britain, and the struggles that I would say borderline surreal abstract muralist, that kind of challenge. And he has a passage there. What you were talking about, David, reminded me of this passage. And he said, we may not be trained, we may not be understanding our composition. We may not have a lot of good, better, best training from museum studies, from et cetera, but we can recognize a living line. And I thought, wow, that is such an incredible thing when you were talking about, there's something about this expression and the simplicity, et cetera. I thought, wow, that kind of reminds me of this idea of the living line. I'm going to turn the question around and ask Larry. Okay, Richard's saying we got to go to quick break. When we get back from the break, Larry, okay, I want to ask you to tell me a favorite of David's of yours in the show, and what kind of space you have prepared in your home for it on the wall when you steal it. And then I'm going to ask the same thing of Dean too. And then what, you know, I'm going to ask Dean to tell me what two things he would steal. One by David and one by Larry, because being the boss of the whole situation, he's got to steal two to make it worth his while, I'm sure. So, Richard, let's go to quick break. We get back from the break. Like I said, Richard, you know, you've heard me say that I love something about the artist that I'm interviewing, but in this case, these guys are real geniuses, and I encourage everybody to put on their calendar, you know, April 9th, when this exhibition opens, called Aquien at our own Santa Barbara Maritime Museum. We'll talk a little bit more when we get back from the break. Don't turn that down. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and we're talking about a new show that's at the Santa Barbara, or will be at the Santa Barbara Museum, Maritime Museum, and it is called Aquien, and it is a collaboration between two genius artists. And I think At least one of them lives in Santa Barbara. Do you both live in Santa Barbara?
No, I do.
Yeah.
And I live in LA.
Okay. So they've been collaborators before, as we found out through, some major projects, a 12-year partnership. And I guess this idea came to both of them that they were going to collaborate because this is so important for us to see this idea that the ocean, the sea, that what we live with here in Santa Barbara is a subject for us and a metaphor for us. And it spans the idea of permanence and loss. And, you know, it's very amazing. So I lost my mom this past fall. And when I, you know, feel, she and I were really close. And when I feel very low, I go down and speak to her, because we actually took her ashes and put them in the area right around the Statue of Liberty, as her folks came through Ellis Island. I forget mm-hmm. what that's called in New York. She grew up right around there. And so she's in the ocean. So I go and talk to her there. And so when you talk about permanence and loss, yeah. I mean, there's no better poem than the ocean for that. We talked a little bit about Ellis's Lobospheres, The Lost Souls of Point Lobos, the 20-year photographic explanation of wave-carved forms. Amazing to see. Larry, we talked about Flotsam and Jetsam. I want to hear more about Flotsam and Jetsam, because I got to tell you, Larry, so I thought, you know, like all appraisers, I thought, oh, when I was in high school and college, I was going to be a great artist, right? So I trained with an artist in Chicago and went on and thought, okay, I'm going to get a degree in art. And I studied, I was at Tufts University. And so here I was at Tufts, and my first formal class was collage. And the professor took me aside and said, you know, you're really good about talking about art, but you're never going to make it. You're never going to create it. He could tell because my collages were so bad. And to me, any kind of collage is the hardest thing to do because it can't be faked. There's no way you can fake it. It's just there. And it's also both two and three dimensional in a strange way. So I want to talk about Flotsam and Jetsam. What happened to you? Where did you start to think about this? How did you start to collect it? When did you work on it?
Well, I got a call from Emily. By the way, we need to give Emily credit.
Oh, Emily Falk. Yes. Hello to Emily. And what a marvelous genius she is, too. Known Emily for 20 years as, you know, she's just been, well, she hadn't been with the museum that long, but I think I knew her when she was at school, too. But so yeah,
I can tell you the genesis of this whole project is that David had a solo show in Culver City, really impressive. A lot of the things you'll see in this and some new pieces. But I saw the show and I thought, boy, this would be really good for the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum. It's okay. Right on target, but it's also really different than anything they've ever had. And my good friend Thomas Van Stein, who's a wonderful artist himself and a member of the Maritime Museum, I gave some samples of David's work, and I said, you should show this to, I didn't know Emily at the time, so I just said, the powers that be, and see what they think. And she really liked what she saw. And then unbeknownst to me, Thomas showed her my work, and she seemed to be fascinated by that too. And she just said, let's have these two guys do a show together. So that's how it all started. And I think that was almost a year ago, wasn't it, David?
I think it was longer than that. I think we've been 18 months, almost 2 years in the making here. It's been a long time.
Was it that long?
Yeah, believe it or not, it flies, yeah. Because I did the solo show in 23.
Yeah, and then it took...
Yeah,
it took like a year, I think. We got a year's notice on this show, so...
Right.
Anyway, so that's... I started working on some new stuff just for the show. I had some things that existed, but not enough to make a show. So yeah, I've just been working away and kind of any. I started trying to paint some fish, and I thought it didn't take long to realize that there've been a trillion paintings of fish, and I wasn't adding anything new. So I decided to paint fish bones and show them in a different way. And that led to, you know, asking my animator friends in Pasadena to see what they could do to bring these to life. And Dean saw this animation for the first time yesterday. And I think we were successful in that. People have described it as mesmerizing.
It's beyond successful. So it was either Emily or Heather sent me late last night a little snippet, and it's fantastic. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
I'm glad to hear that. So found objects. I found a package of Lucky Strike cigarettes in the Leadbetter Beach parking lot. It had been run over and rained on, and I thought it looked really interesting, so I picked it up and brought it home and unfolded the package, and it turned out to be a devil. And so I named it, because it's Lucky Strike, I named the piece Lucky Devil. And it's all framed and ready for the show. And that's why it's Flotsam and Jetsam, because it's so many different kinds of things. There's a tin can I found when I lived in London. Also, it was just in the street and been run over and rained on by snow and who knows what. It had been there for a while, but it looked beautiful. It had a beautiful patina. So I picked it up and brought it home and turned it into a fish. And that'll be in the show also.
Richard's giving us a sign we got to go to break. And I want to ask, when we get back from the break, in the tradition of all great structuralists, Larry, I mean, I'm thinking if you were not an incredibly gifted designer, I wonder if you ever thought about yourself as an architect. So that's something that just occurred to me as I was looking through your website and getting questions together for today. Let's go to quick break. I want to hear the answer to that question when we get back from the break. Let's go to quick break, Richard, and then we'll get sort of reannounce the show April 9th to July 26th, Aquian at Santa Barbara Maritime Museum. And as you can see, this is not your regular plein air. Okay, guys, this is not your regular plein air show. This is something to really get your teeth into. And I'm so excited. And we still haven't asked Dean Noble, our new, head honcho. We haven't asked him what works he's going to steal when the show closes. So we've got some exciting things to find out when we get back from the break. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute.
Thomas Van Stein, Harbor at Sunset photo painting that's currently on display here that I would love to throw under my arm and make off with. The one thing that really surprised me, and I think Larry will get a kick out of this, that I really didn't think of until I started here exactly a month ago, was the strong correlation between art and maritime. You can see the sailing ship behind me. I'm looking at a DeWitt Whistler Jane schooner going through some rough seas ahead. For so many cultures, their maritime science was kind of the height of their technology. And we've had air travel for, 100 years? Automobiles have been affordable for maybe 100 years. Railroad for 150. So if you wanted to go to someplace new, you kind of had to, if I can try to talk like Carl Jung, you had to get in this wooden womb and set sail on the waves, and it would be an arduous voyage, but wake up someplace utterly new, new people, new food, new trees, new animals. And I think, and then you think about in mythology, especially the Greeks, if you to go to the underworld, you're crossing the river Styx. So what I've come away with is the strong correlation between the maritime world and art. And I think it has to do with the sense of adventure. And if you wanted to have an adventure up until 150 years ago, kind of had to get on a ship. And what I've enjoyed the most about this lovely little museum is the stories are practically spilling out the front door and down across the steps. We're not looking for new stories to tell. We're looking for the best way to tell these spectacular stories. And just the executive director and me wants to remind everybody, April 9th to July 26th at the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum down at the harbor. Stop by and have a dart coffee. A portion of every coffee you have benefits the museum. The coffee house used to be the old gift shop, and dart coffee moved in, and we're making probably in a day what we used to make in a month. So we're very
right.
Dart is local. They roast their own beans locally. And if you can find a coffee house with a better view, there's a museum, VIP museum membership headed your way. But I don't think there's a coffee place with a better view on the planet.
Fantastic. Final question for Larry Vigon, and that's it. Larry, you actually still teach. You started to teach in 1990, and you're still teaching at present, the Art of Journaling Workshop.
I mean, conception. That's something that was a one-off six-week workshop I did about 3 years ago.
Okay.
I haven't been teaching since.
Okay.
I've been learning.
So I was thinking about teaching and thinking about, you know, saying, well, I wonder if Larry's had any experience with students. And I just have to tell you, Richard and I've been doing this show long distance. We used to do it in a studio before COVID, but now we do it long distance. We've been doing this show almost 20 years. And over the years, we've compiled like a list of our favorite expressions from some of the artists that we've interviewed. And there's an artist in town that has taught at City College for years and years and years. And we had him on the show, his anniversary of his 40th year teaching. And I said, Michael, you know, Michael Drury, I'm sure you know, he's a great landscape, well, surf artist, actually. I said, you know, you've been teaching for 40 years. And he teaches oil. And so what's your main message for your students? Over 40 years, you must have a main kind of synthesis message. And he said, I do, Elizabeth, I do. I said, well, what's your message? He said, you've got to teach the students when to stop, mm-hmm. when to stop painting, when to stop creating. That's the most important thing you can teach a student. And I said, well, how do you teach them when to stop? And he said, Elizabeth and Richard and I laugh about this to the day. Michael said, you teach them to stop right before they start painting the brown potato in the sky.
Okay. In spite of the fact that potatoes really are very good.
No, Richard, what he was meaning is with oil, by the time, yeah, you're working in the, you're doing your clouds. Oh my God, my clouds aren't right. And I redo my clouds. All of a sudden you don't have a cloud. You got a baked potato in the sky. And that's mm-hmm. the nature of the medium. And so I love that. And, you know, mm-hmm. I was fishing actually when I was asking Larry Vigon, you know, what's something that he would teach a young student.
My favorite quotes by Picasso is, he said, it took me 4 years to learn how to paint like Caravaggio and a lifetime to paint like a child. I think there's just so much in that, of that inhibition, the lack of ego and having fun and experimenting and, you know, just keep surprising yourself, I think, which is something I still like to do to this day. Is keep surprising myself. So
it's wonderful. We had last week an artist on who was also a counselor at some of the adult, I guess you would call them the adult services for adults with Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, et cetera. And she taught textile art. And she said her favorite quote by Picasso was, you know, when you ask me what a painting means, I don't ask you what a bird song means, but you stop and listen, don't you?
Yeah, I know that quote really well.
Yeah.
I recently saw a cartoon of a young boy saying to his mother, "When I grow up, I want to be an artist." And she says, "Sorry, son, you can't do both."
I love it. Richard, let's write that one down too. I love it. That's great. Well, thank you, all three of you, Dean Noble, Larry Vigon, and David Ellis. And the show is Akuyan, and it is at the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum, April 9th to July 26th. I know David's going to have a kick butt opening event, so keep your ears peeled. We'll announce it on the show, and it's going to be fantastic. And thank you. And I got to say, when I keep on saying these two genius artists, I really mean it. So, so marvelous. And it's so cool to meet you both. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you,
Elizabeth. Thank you.